Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Boxing Podcast. I'm your host, Dev Sahni. We are sponsored by 32 Red, and with me is your favourite boxing pundit. And he's also my favourite boxing pundit. It is, of course, Steve Lillis.
Hey, I'm good, Dev. I'm good. I'm your favourite. That does for me, mate. If I'm in your good books, I'm doing well in life.
Well, you're right at the top of my good books. In terms of boxing punditry, I've got to ask you back now, straight away. Who's your favourite boxing pundit? You've been in the game years. Go on.
Oh, mate, you know what? I love my pal Barry Jones. And yep. I really love since he retired, Andy Lee.
Yes.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. And he was incredible on BT the other week.
Yeah, for the Khan fight.
Really, really good. Now, if I was a TV executive, a boss of a TV company, which I'm not, I would just slap a big contract in front of him. He is the business.
Yeah, he's good. I'm a big fan of him. I like it in terms of versatility. I'm a fan of David Haye because he seems to be able to talk about absolutely everything. I don't know how much he sort of blags it, but he's good, isn't he? He gets going.
I'm not Hayes' biggest fan as a pundit. I like Barry Jones. I think Buncey's knowledge is incredible. And there's a new face on the block is Andy Lee.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, talk to me. Last week, you were in the Box Nation studios. You had Arthur Beterbiev, the IBF World Light Heavyweight Champion. He was on. He got another stoppage. How did you find that?
Yeah, against Radovoje Kalajdzic. Kalajdzic tried his best, but it was nowhere near good enough. What Beterbiev is just pure brute force. He comes forward, he's heavy-handed. Every shot you feel and you hurt. But you still think, if someone who can box a bit, put him on the back foot, he'd have problems. And you can see how he gets floored sometimes, because his feet are everywhere. But his power is incredible. He just overwhelms people, and that's why people make a case for him being number one. But I think someone who puts him on the back foot can give him all the problems in the world. Even if we saw a Kovalev, the way he boxed against Elidio Alvarez, he would give him problems. And that's the fight I really want to see at light heavyweight.
They've got history as well from the amateurs, haven't they? Didn't Beterbiev beat him a couple of times?
Twice he beat him, yeah. I mean, Beterbiev was a great amateur. I mean, he never medaled at Olympics, but he did everything. I don't think he medaled at the Olympics from the top of my head. And if I'm wrong, someone get hold of me on Twitter and rap my knuckles. I also think he fought Usyk. Did he beat him as well? Look, I'll be fibbing if I say I'm certain of which way that fight went. I'd have to check it up. And we're not the sort of podcast where we might look up BoxRec, but I'd have to go delve in some mad records I keep to find out about Beterbiev. But I'm sure he never medaled at the Olympics, but beat Kovalev twice.
Steve, are you telling me you use BoxRec? I thought you just come up with all of this off the cuff. Are you telling me this whole thing's been a lie?
Yeah, it's been. I'm on BoxRec every minute, mate. I'm on BoxRec, as I sit next to you here, because I had to pronounce the Bosnian Kalajdzic name, or try to anyway.
Well, what about Canelo Alvarez, unified middleweight champion now, Steve? It wasn't the most exciting, compelling fight, but he beat Danny Jacobs, who's a legit sort of top 3-4 middleweight in the world.
Yeah, look. It was a decent fight. You know, some people walk like it was a brilliant fight. It was a high-class fight. I thought Alvarez was fantastic the first half of the fight. Jacobs come back into it. Second half did a lot better. But there was only one winner. And the thing that impresses me more and more about Alvarez, you know, we know there's controversy around him. Since that Mayweather fight in 2013, was it? September 2013. Yep. He's had 10, 11 fights. He's got that draw with Golovkin, 10 wins and a draw. And he's improved and he's improved and he's improved so much. But I still don't have him. You know, a lot of people are naming him pound for pound number one now. I still don't think you can put him ahead of Vasyl Lomachenko or Terence Crawford.
Yeah, well, I think it just changes each time that they fight, and it will probably be the same. You know, Usyk's injured at the moment; he's not going to fight Takam. But I would imagine once he makes his heavyweight debut and looks great, they'll be like, "Oh, actually, Usyk's number one." And you know, these top 3-4 in the world appear interchangeable after their respective fights. That's what I'm finding.
Yeah, I'm like that with Crawford and Lomachenko. I see each one in action and I change my mind about who's number one. But, you know, you look at, you know, that's no slant on Alvarez or Usyk, because you look at all the world champions in the current climate and there's a lot of good ones. But, you know, there's only maybe a handful or so who could all hold their own in any era. And I think there's four fighters there, Lomachenko, Crawford, Usyk and Alvarez, who would have been a force in most generations of boxing.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of forces, this week we are talking about heavyweight forces. Massive show has been announced for July 13th at London's O2 Arena. It's Daniel Dubois against Nathan Gorman, a fight that's been building for 18 months or so, and they're going to be battling it out for the vacant British heavyweight title. Joe Joyce, Olympic silver medalist, also features on that show with an opponent to be announced at a later date. Well, Frank Warren held a press conference earlier this week and caught up with all of them. We hear from Daniel Dubois this week. We hear from Nathan Gorman this week. We hear from Joe Joyce. And of course, we hear from Frank Warren. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of the Boxing Podcast. Well, Daniel Dubois, in his short career so far, has picked up the Southern Area title. He's picked up the English title. He's picked up various WBO fringe titles. And now he goes for the vacant British Heavyweight Championship against Nathan Gorman, his longtime rival, on July 13th at the O2 Arena. It was quite a feisty press conference. We were a little surprised in general, the boxing media, by some of what Dubois in particular was coming out with. And our man Richard Hubbard caught up with the man they call Dynamite straight after the presser.
Daniel Dubois, we're here at the futuristic BT Sports Studio to announce your British title challenge for the vacant title against Nathan Gorman. Now, when I just mentioned that, what's your current feeling about this fight?
At the moment, I'm kind of, relaxed mood. I haven't really started my full camp yet, so right now it's just like, yeah, let's get on. I have an idea in my head of how the fight's going to go down, so I'm chilled right now.
You don't give much away, Daniel, but is this a fight that really does stir up a little bit of emotion or excitement?
Every fight for me does. This one maybe so a bit more, and maybe this one a bit more. We'll see on the night. It depends on my mood. I can't really say so myself, but I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling confident for this one, and I'm ready to go on.
Just had a press conference, and it seems to be, but particularly from Nathan's side, they seem to be turning it back to being like a school days rivalry almost when they talk about the GB squad up in Sheffield. That doesn't really seem to register with you. Is it just something you think, leave the past in the past?
Yeah, I'm in this business to make a name for myself and make, win titles, win whatever titles they throw at me. And, coming through these guys, I've got to do it. That's all, it's cold. I'm pretty cold-blooded, so this is just me, and, this is the hurt business, and I enjoy it.
Nathan has stated, but you fought something like 200 to 300 rounds while you're on the squad, and he suggests, but in his own mind, he didn't lose one of them. It's quite a big statement, that.
It really means nothing. It can go to the wind, that statement. It's really, if that's what he thinks, then fine, he can go whatever he wants to think. I know what I got to do. I know. My mood and how I'm going to get coming closer to the fight, and I'll be ready on fight night.
Right from the off, since Nathan came on board with us promotionally, it seems like he's been the one making a lot of noise about this fight. Maybe a bit more keen on it than you, is that just maybe him wanting to sort of knock you off your perch almost?
No, we're fighters, we need each other, we need dance partners, so if this is the next one, then let's get on.
It was talked about for the end of the year, and you were sort of lined up for a British title showdown with Joe Joyce. Joyce is sort of moving on to other things. Are you happy now to have this fight brought forward?
Yes, yeah, very happy. I think it's just right. He's the right fighter to make, perfect for my style. And I want to get it on. I really want to get this fight on. And I'm looking forward to it. It's exciting for me, and even though the way, my mood and how good I'm going to feel on fight night, I can't wait.
This could be the fight that really puts you out there in terms of publicity and exposure.
Exactly. So, yeah, we'll see.
Do you detect a little bit of jealousy from Nathan's side in terms of he thinks you're the sort of poster boy of the promotional company and you maybe get things more your own way? Do you detect there's a little bit of a resentment there?
Maybe there is. You know, there's most, yes, most people are. You know, they see me, maybe they're watching me on TV. You know, the hate is, and at the end of the day, they can become your fans too. So who knows after this one.
Nathan says, but he anticipates himself obviously winning by knockout. His last few fights have all gone the distance. Do you feel he possesses anything like the sort of power to sort of put you to the canvas?
No, not at all. I know, to be honest, I've just got to come in on the fight right and I'll get the job done.
You are a boxing student yourself, and I know you study a lot of stuff. How do you assess Nathan in terms of strengths and weaknesses, particularly strengths?
I think he's been looked after from the day he stepped in the boxing gym. He's been looked after. He's been polished up to look good in his fights and whatever. But in with me, it won't come down to that. And I know I've just got to come in and fight right, and the rest is history.
Are you his first real opponent?
Yeah. Yeah, no, as my last opponent said, baby, well, this guy's definitely beyond that. He's definitely been on that.
You haven't been overly impressed with Nathan's last few fights. Maybe you sort of think he lacks a little bit on the entertainment side of things. Would that be the case?
Well, it's his fight. He'll never be entertaining. It's just the way he is. He's, you know, assessing him, I can tell you, he's never going to be an exciting fighter to watch. And no, he just is a big, slobby-looking fighter. You're not really, you know. To be honest, I don't even want to talk about it. It's what it is.
Well, that being the case, I want to briefly take you back to your last fight. Now, Richard Laaty, he had like something like 11 KOs in his 14 fights, and you decided to get into like a hook-off with him, a hook fest. What was the thinking behind that?
To be honest, I don't know. The spirit and what you know, the energy told me to do that, and that's what I went out and did. It couldn't help it. I was at the time, the only will I had, the only saying I had that in that fight is that I got to win, and that's fight to win, and you'll get the win. And that's it.
When really sort of hyped young heavyweights come on the scene, wise old boxing sages always say, wait till he takes one on the whiskers, then we'll judge him. To my mind, I think you took a couple on the whiskers that night, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to come through. It's a fight though, so if you ain't gonna be exactly sharp on point and get your head out of the way, you're gonna get clipped. And I got clipped, and no big deal, I came through it. And I just came back firing on all cylinders. I came back sharper, you know. As soon as he clipped me, I was that bit sharper, not to get clipped again. So, yeah, it's a learning experience.
I think it was Frank Warren's own words in his column. I think he said, from showing a little bit of inexperience, you got a great experience.
Yeah, definitely. To sum that up, I'd say so as well.
Same sort of approach against Gorman. You're going to try and walk through him, or do you think, you know, it might be a bit more technical?
Whatever, you know, my dad and my team, they suggest to me, I'll take it on board and I'll just figure it out on the night. I'll get a feel for him, I'll feel him in the ring, and you know, once I feel what he's about and what he's trying to do, I'll deal with it.
Well, that was big hitting dynamite Daniel Dubois. Let's hear now from his rival and fellow challenger for the vacant British heavyweight title, Nathan Gorman.
Dubois v Gorman, the O2 Arena, 13th of July 2019. And put his name first, Nathan.
I know, shockingly, innit? I'm going to have to cover it up, but Gorman v Dubois and I. Yeah, it's here now, innit? The British title at stake. Probably two of the best prospects, heavyweight prospects in the world, as such. Going at it for the most prestige belt in the world. So it's here, you know, we've only got 2 months to go. That'll fly by. You know, I'm flying into the gym at the minute. You know, I'm really looking forward to putting on a show. I really am.
You seem to have been, shall I say, chirping about this fight for a couple of years now, and he hasn't really said anything, but you finally got it.
He doesn't say much, does he, at all, to be fair, bless him. But yeah, I've been chirping. Like Rick said, you know, there's no lies in what Rick was saying. The minute he turned pro, I said to Rick, and I'm not this type of character, I said, that's the fight I want. You know, whenever that fight can be made, Rick, that's the fight I want. And he always said, listen, yeah, let it build, blah, 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 blah. And obviously, Frank's got it at the right time now for the British title. You know, he's struck while the iron's hot. And we're here now fighting for the best belt in boxing, is it? I'd like to agree so.
Do you get the feeling he wants it as much as you, or he's just not that bothered who you put in front of him?
I don't think he's bothered, is he? He's not interested. He's just, he is what he is, is Daniel. In my personal opinion, I want it a hell of a lot. I'm prepared to do a lot to get that belt.
Is there something in you that kind of thinks he's been the poster boy of the organisation and maybe you want to sort of knock him off his perch?
Of course he is. Listen, he's big. He's got a nice big six-pack. I haven't, so he looks good on photos, doesn't he? But it is what it is, mate. When I knock him off the perch, then I'll take over from there. When I'll be the number one, I'll be the golden goose then. But until then, I'm happy to be the underdog, which I'd imagine on all the bookies and etc. I haven't looked, but I'd imagine I will be the underdog going into this fight.
Why?
Don't know. People just write me off, wouldn't they? You know, they'll look at him, you know, the way he's built and everything, and think, ooh, he looks handy. But if it was a bodybuilding competition, he'd win Mr. Olympia. But it isn't. It's fighting, and that's one thing I can do really good is fight.
Has he fought better people than you?
Far from it. How was he? When you think about it, mate, who has he fought, really? No respect. I fought Kevin Johnson. I fought Cajano. So we basically fought on parity of opponents. You can't really go off Larty's last opponent. I think he had to dye his beard to cover up his grey hair. You know, that big orange beard he had. But
I'm just trying to work out why you think you're so certain he's going to be the favourite.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you just think it's maybe spectacular knockouts, maybe?
It could be the knockout reel. That's the thing. It could be. Probably is.
You've been a little bit frustrated over your last three fights, but you've actually had to go the distance and you haven't been able to post any statements out there.
No, of course not, because to be honest with you, mate, in them three fights, I've had about a week's notice for all three of them, you know, with pullouts and etc. and whatever. And you can ask any fighter in the world, when you've got a survivor in front of you, it's extremely hard to look good against, and you can't get motivated from, because you know for a certain fact, you know, they're there to do what they do. So
when I spoke to you yesterday, I suggested that there might be a public perception when people are doing their predictions, but the likelihood is of you winning on points or Daniel winning via knockout. Now, you rejected that suggestion. Can you explain it again?
Yeah, we've been working. Listen, I can't say too much what we've been working on in the gym, but we're working on a lot of things, and I think you're going to see a different Nathan Gorman come July the 13th. I don't believe it's going to go to points. I really don't, because we're rivals. He doesn't like me. I don't like him. And we're just going to get down to business. You know, we're going to get in the middle of the ring. I think we're just going to throw bombs. I really do. He hasn't got the style to jab and move, and I want to punch his head in.
I think people view you as being the more technical.
Yeah.
You know, possibly a little bit more nimble.
Listen, I'm not going to lose that, am I? That's still in my locker. That's up there. But if it comes down to that, I'm going to revert to that, aren't I? But there is going to be time, some exciting moments where I think people are going to be on the edge of the seats in this fight.
Did you take anything from his hook off against Larty?
He got caught, didn't he? You know,
he stood up as well, though.
He stood up, but how old's Larty again? 27, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There again, I'm 22 and I'm bald, so you can't really say anything there, can you? But I don't dye my beard orange, I like to cover up the grey hair. He took a punch. When I first watched Larty on the YouTube, because obviously I've watched him, I thought, this won't go around. You know, I thought Daniel's going to hit him and fold him in two. Because, to be fair, you're struggling with cruiserweights, no disrespects. But he gave Daniel some problems, didn't he? I wasn't expecting it. And he caught him, and they had a bit of a rally in the third or fourth round. And then, obviously, Daniel just caught him properly, and it was the fight ender. But that's Richard Larty, isn't it? It is what it is.
I think from talking to you in the past, and I don't know if you want to say this now, but you perhaps question Daniel's reputation as a concussive puncher.
Yeah. I've shared the ring with him numerous occasions. Yeah, it's 3 or 4 years ago. But unless he's developed a monstrous, monstrous power, nothing really can trouble me. You know what I mean? People are yet to see how tough I am. I'm a very tough man. But there's also no awards in being a tough man in boxing, is there? You know what I mean? So I'll avoid them punches.
It sounds like this is just the fight you've been waiting for, to bring out the real you, if you like.
Exactly. I'm raring to go. You know, since day one I've been waiting for this fight, and it's here. It's not far away, it's around the corner. That's fair. These 2 months will fly by, and we'll be ready to rock and roll.
There's obviously been a lot of talk about this GB sparring.
Yep.
And you said out of 200-300 rounds, you don't think you lost one of them. There'd be some go in that.
truthfully, mate, I really don't. You know, I really don't. He never put me up on the question, did he? He said, "Oh, I was only 18 years of age. I was only 19." So he was basically saying, "Yeah, you're right, Nath, but I was only 18. That has nothing to do with it, does it?"
Maybe he's a young 18 and you're an old 19, maybe.
Possibly, but come on. Mike Tyson was a world champion at 20, so.
During those 200 to 300 rounds, did either of you hit the canvas?
No.
Rocked?
I wasn't rocked. I don't know about him.
Just finally, what's Mr. Fury have to say about this fight? Obviously, we're based in the same gym now.
Yeah, obviously, he's backing me 100% as Tyson. You know, he fully believes I have the ingredients to beat Daniel, which so do I. And it's good to work with, you know, be around with the heavyweight champion of the world as such. You know, little things he does in his training I can pick up, and little maneuvers he does I can try and mimic them. So it's fantastic to have him in the gym, it really is.
Just want to do a finally with you now. Just under a month before your fight, you've got Warrington Galahad taking place in Leeds. Talk to me about that fight.
Very good fight. I've never seen Galahad up close and personal. I know Ricky has, because we used to have a world champion in our gym, Zaki Yanov, and Ricky used to take him sparring up at Sheffield, and Ricky used to tell me about Kid Galahad and all the boys in the gym. You know, he can fight. Well, obviously he can fight because he's fighting for a world title. But to be honest with you, mate, I've ripped Josh Warren off twice now, you know, first against Lee Selby and second against Carl Frampton. So as much as I like the pair of them, I don't want to write Josh Warren off again, because I've got it wrong twice on the bounce this time.
So you're going with Josh?
If I had to put my last pound on it, I'd go with Josh, yeah, but it's anyone's game and it's 50-50. I really do believe that.
Well, that was Nathan Gorman. That's a big, big fight coming up. We're hyped about that one. Let's hear from the man who put it together, although perhaps didn't actually want to put it together. Here's Hall of Fame promoter Frank Warren.
Frank, heavy duty, July 13th, O2 Arena. Is some fight you're putting on there?
It's a great fight, you know, for the fight fans. It's brilliant. Two undefeated young bucks getting into the ring, facing up for each other to find out who's the best. And they're so much up for it. They both are super confident in their own abilities. They both fancy the job, which means it's going to be a great night for the fans.
You've consistently said all along, but this fight needs to happen when the time is right. Is the time now right, in your view?
It's too late now to worry about that. You know, the Boxing Board of Control called for a fight between Daniel and Joe Joyce for the vacant title. Joe, as we said at the press conference, said that he didn't want to participate in it because he was number one for the European and also for Manuel Shah's WBA title, and he didn't want to jeopardise that. Next one in was Nathan. I wanted to get him to push it back, but neither of them would pull out the fight. So we are where we are.
It does give you the opportunity, like you say, for this heavy-duty night to showcase them two and Joe Joyce and potentially one or two others, maybe.
It certainly does, but this is a good fight. These are, you know, Joe Joyce and Daniel and Nathan, they are the next guys in, whilst the other three world-class heavyweights, world champions, are fighting in the States, you know, with AJ out there, Tyson going to be out there for a few fights, establishing his brand and building his profile over there. And obviously Deontay Wilder's based there. It means these guys fighting in Britain prime time are going to be the next guys. So by the time AJ comes back and Tyson comes back, will be in a position to fight them. There may even be that mandatory challengers.
You really are probably only talking about 12 months for these guys now, aren't you?
Correct, absolutely correct. So it's a big step up. And they're capable fighters and they're doing it. It's not the end of the world for losers. I mean, going back a few years when we did James DeGale and George Groves, early part of their career, everyone said, why are we doing the fight? And we did it, and there was a winner, which was George Groves. It wasn't the end of the world for James DeGale. He went and won a world title, as did George Groves. So, you know, that's how it is. But it's good for the fans, and say good for them, and it's good experience for the fighters. It's a great experience for them.
What do you take from today? I mean, we know what Nathan's like. He's a good talker. He's, you know, he's got the gift of the gab. But we got a bit more out of Daniel today, didn't we?
Well, he's, you know, Nathan's quite articulate and he's a very intelligent guy, as is Daniel. He's very intelligent, but he's more introverted than that. And I think he's one of those guys that says, you know, that does his talking in the ring. But today he was quite animated and he was quite, you know, he's quite on it. There's no love lost between them. It's not trash talk, no love. It's just, you can see there's not a... I think they respect each other, but it's like, I'm better than you and I'm going to show it to you on the night. So there's that thing about them. But there is a certain amount of needle there, and I'm not sure what it goes back to, but, you know, it all adds to the ingredient of being an exciting night.
Do you get the feeling, say, with Nathan, he desperately wants to fight Daniel Dubois? With Daniel, you could chuck him in with a prime Mike Tyson and he just wouldn't care.
Yeah, he never questions who he's going to box. He's like that. But then again, nor did Nathan. Nathan wants to fight. Their styles, they've come on a bit. They've got a lot to learn, both of them still. But their styles will complement each other in the fight. You know, Nathan's got a good jab. It's funny, when they stood up against each other, he's quite taller than I thought, Nathan, you know, because I've never seen them together before. But he's got a good jab. He rolls in, he throws good body shots, uppercuts. He's got great lateral movement, head movement. Daniel's got a really, really solid jab, you know, straight punches. But his last couple of fights, certainly in his fight against Larty, he was fighting well inside. So that's going to be interesting.
Nathan thinks that Daniel is the promotional poster boy and he wants to knock him off his pedestal. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, it is a fair comment. He is our promotional poster boy. Day one he came with me and how we've built him, and that's how we work with him. Nathan come along after 8-9 fights and we've done it equally as well with him, building his profile and helping him. But Daniel was from day one, and Daniel, you know, I can't just say, sorry, Daniel, I'm no longer going to be banging the drum for you and banging the drum for Nathan. We do the best we can for each of the fighters. And at the end of the day, we'll be banging the drum for the winner and the loser after this fight, because that, you know, it ain't the end of the career, the end of the loser's career. They're good quality fighters. At the end of the day, just fight, get on with it. And if you want to be the lead role, then make yourself the lead role. We'll find out who's the guy on the day. So Nathan's got the bit between his teeth over that. Then he's got to knock the fella who he feels is the poster boy off his pedestal.
And you'll just have to sit on your hands, I suppose, at ringside.
Yeah, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to enjoy it like all the fans will. It's going to be a tremendous night.
Last question, Frank. I know you're keen to go. You've done a lot of talking. Joe Joyce, quick update on his situation. He's got Houston off in a week or so's time. Big opponent at the O2 is the plan, I guess.
Yeah, he's got to come through that first. It's a tough fight for him. Ustinov is, you know, for someone who's only had 8 pro fights, it's a tough fight for him. But I believe, you know, hopefully he'll come through it. And we'll announce his opponent immediately after, which will be a world-ranked boxer.
Steve, it's actually happening. It's Daniel Dubois, it's Nathan Gorman. They're 21 and 22. They're both undefeated. Isn't this supposed to be marinating for a few years?
Marinating. It's one of those favourite, if you know these words that come along every so often, marinating is one of them. It's like football fans use the word limbs, don't they? You know, like banter was the first of these words that got up my nose. And this marinades one. Well, not all great fights have to marinade. And here's another one. I'm just sitting here, you know, I'm writing down some notes here, Dev, next year. And in the last 50 years, I think the only British title fight that either matches or had more significance was Henry Cooper, Joe Bugner in 1971, Lennox Lewis against Gary Mason in 1991, which was a massive fight here, Dillian White, Anthony Joshua in 2015, and you could maybe add Fury Chisora to that. Significant because the winner of this, you think, is certain to challenge for a version of the world heavyweight title in 18 to 24 months. And I was watching the press conference online today, and Frank Warren, the promoter, was saying that the winner of this fight will be here waiting for Joshua and Fury when they come home. And that's no exaggeration. You know, obviously Joe Joyce, one of them might have to get through Joe Joyce, but this is such a significant fight for the winner. You know, he's not far off being even a world title eliminator, because to win this, that is where the winner is going to go. And what was fantastic to see today was national newspapers that have starved themselves of covering these sort of fights, unless it, you know, it's just been named fighters lately who are ruining, you know, the mainstream. You know, it's good to see this morning these two getting some publicity, and people are waking up, will wake up before July 13 and realize this is a real fight, and I can't wait for it. And even, you know, the loser, they're still in the infancy of their career and can bounce back. It's not like somebody who's, you know, been boxing for 7-8 years as a pro, had 2 or 3 tests, and it's make or break. the loser falls by the wayside for 18 months. But when you're 21 and 22, there's plenty of time to come back from that, especially if you're a heavyweight.
Yeah, and it might sound outlandish on the surface to say something like that. However, you look back at the last significant British heavyweight title fight. It was Anthony Joshua. It was Dillian White. That was December 2015. Anthony Joshua's fight after winning that was for the world heavyweight title. I think the circumstances are very different at the moment. A lot of things had happened. The chips had kind of fallen. Titles had been stripped of Tyson Fury. There was a lot going on at that point for it to work out for Anthony Joshua. But on the surface, he won the British title and then he fought for and won the world title in his next fight. This is a very significant fight, Steve. I completely hear what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, not just crucial their careers, but significant for the world heavyweight title picture. I know there's people listening who would think I'm on another planet for saying that. But the winner is likely to go on and fight for the world title, or worse, get to a final eliminator stage. So to me, it's a world title eliminator. And as I said, it's not the end of the world for the loser when two men are so young. And what impresses me about both boxers was something Frank Warren said. He wanted them to fight at the back end of this year in the free headline, his big December shows. We all know Frank has a mega December show every year just before Christmas.
Christmas cracker.
He wanted them to headline that. He spoke to both of them. They said, no, we'll have it at the O2 Arena. You know, once they saw that there was a gap there because Joe Joyce was going to go in his own direction for the European title or WBA regular, they both said, we'll have it. And that is so refreshing to hear from boxers in an era where everybody wants things to happen yesterday. And that's what we're getting with this fight. You know, Ricky Hatton was saying today that, you know, the era where fighters have 20 fights and go and get a world title fight is over. I really can't wait for it, honestly, Dev.
Well, the other thing, Steve, I can't wait either. I just want to pick your brain on a couple of the comments. Daniel Dubois really, he talked it up a bit today. And, you know, it was unexpected because Daniel Dubois often at these press conferences, he doesn't say an awful lot. He isn't particularly engaging. But this was like, it was a different guy. And he said Nathan Gorman will be his easiest fight. Discuss.
Well, it wasn't just that. He said it would be his easiest fight. I mean, I think he knows it won't be there. But that was to get to Nathan. And that's the sort of thing that might get to Nathan in the build-up. Yeah. It was clever reverse psychology, if you like. But when it was something else he said there, Dev, when he said we're in the hurt business and this is what I'm going to do to him, he meant it. He wouldn't be touched too much on the when he was on the Team GB squad and sparred those 200 or 300 rounds. He wouldn't talk too much about it as if it was all distant, it's in the past, it's about now, which I get, but that tells me there was something there. And I know from speaking to Nathan they weren't the best of buddies in that camp. I think they roomed together. We'll have to get Nathan on the podcast in the next week or so and ask him. I think they roomed together for one or two nights and they got separated after that. They just didn't click. Not because, and what I think the main reason being, because they're not bad men as such and they're bad enough in the ring, is they're completely different personalities and they just clashed. I think Nathan found it impossible to have a conversation with Daniel, because they're just different people, different personalities.
They are chalk and cheese for sure. And you mentioned about the time on Team GB, the 200, 300 odd rounds that they sparred. Nathan Gorman said that Daniel Dubois didn't win a single one of them. I mean, what do you reckon of that?
He said that to me. I was at the Hatton's gym a few weeks ago and he said he wasn't sure how many ran, but he didn't lose a single round of that spar. But it was something Joe Joyce mentioned at that press conference. He can remember him. And he said, when you're in that squad, you might be Team GB, that word team, but you're all fighting for one place to get to the Olympics, to get to the world. It's like Joe Joyce had to compete with Anthony Joshua to get there. You know, then it was Joe Joyce's chance to get there. You know, these guys are all in competition there to get that nomination. So, of course, at the time, Gorman and Dubois aren't thinking of, you know, turning professional. They must have been thinking, well, I want that Olympic nomination. I'm going to get the better of him in sparring. So the rivalry builds being around each other. We saw a fight the other week where, you know, there was rivalry from Team GB when they were teammates, Scott Fitzgerald and Anthony Fowler. So you can, you know, you're in this. I think when we read this Team GB thing, as if we're all mates together, it's a little bit misleading sometimes. And, we're seeing that with this fight.
One of the things Gorman has said is that he's actually very surprised that this fight has come along. He's surprised Daniel's taken it. He sort of gives him props for taking the fight. Were you surprised that this came together?
This quick, I was absolutely shocked when I got wind of it a couple of days ago. I couldn't even resist putting it on Twitter that I'd got wind of it. You know, a few people offered me bets and all sorts of things on it. And
I took
a couple 10p bets. One of the 10p guys lifted it to £10. And to his credit, he tweeted me this morning and said, "Where do you want me to put the tenner?" I said, "Just give it to the charity I'm running the New York Marathon for later in the year." So fair enough, you know. But it did surprise me that it's happening this quick. And a lot of the reason why is speaking to Gorman, because you know I live near Ricky Hatton's gyms. It's the gym I most probably visit more than most, and you're always sending me off there with our cameraman Chris to do stuff. And you know, we'll just be chatting there, and he would say, "I want the fight." Ricky would say, "We're ready for this fight." They wanted it for a year or so. They've been talking, "We'll have it tomorrow," without a shadow of a doubt. But Nathan's always said, "No, he won't take it yet. It'll happen, but he won't take it yet." So I think it took them by, if it took me by them by surprise, it certainly took us by surprise. I don't know about you, Dev, how long you had win for it for or anything. I don't know. You're around Frank's office a lot, so I don't know when you got wind of it and whether you were surprised or believed it was going to take place.
No, I've had a bit of wind, Steve. You could say that. I understood that the fight was coming. We got that nice promo together, which I hope everyone enjoyed. Good fun. But Steve, it's not just about Daniel Dubois and Nathan Gorman on July 13th. There's Joe Joyce, who's going to be in action as well. Now, no opponent was actually named today. I think they're working on a few things. But who would you like to see Joe Joyce in with?
Well, at home, you've got Derek Chisora, but it looks like, I think they might like to make that, but I think Frank Warren suggested they might try to make that match today, but they're too far apart with Chisora's demands. Robert Hellenius is a very winnable fighter. He's still highly ranked with the IBF, but I think he's got something coming up. Obviously, I think Joe Joyce would like to fight Ajit Kabayel, the German European champion. He's the mandatory for that, but I think that's dragging his heels to get to that fight, and I'm sure it'll happen. He's also ranked with the WBC. The fight I'd like, and I don't think it'll be him, is Joseph Parker.
He was linked to Chisora, wasn't he?
He's been linked to Chisora. He's still there or thereabouts. You know, he's still got value. And, you know, there's a lot of people around there. You know, you've got people, you know, I'm looking at the rankings here in front of you. You've got people like Alexander Povetkin, who are 9 with a WBA, 7 with a WBC. But, you know, fights like that, they're hard, hard fights, you know, despite Joe's vast experience. And if you win that, you've got to get a world title fight.
Well, some interesting names there, Steve. I'm curious to see who is the man in the opposite corner, but let's hear from the juggernaut himself at the press conference earlier this week.
Now, Joe, we know now that you're not fighting for the British title and you're pursuing other options. Easy decision to make?
Yeah. I'm very interested in the fight with Dubois and Gorman. That's going to be entertaining. But I mean, perhaps I could have the winner like after that. But obviously, my goal is to, you know, because I'm mandatory for the European and the world WA regular. So, you know, ideally, I'd like a Manuel Char or Ajit Kabayel. If not, like, you know, maybe move on to some other big names in the top 10 to get me closer and higher up in the rankings, and you know, strategically. Get me closer to a world title, heavyweight world title. So,
the opportunities that you've talked about, the European title, Kabayel, you talked about Char, who's got a version of the WBA world title. Would those opportunities have no longer been there had you have gone through with the British title challenge?
Yeah, definitely not the European. I wouldn't have been mandatory. I think the European board actually said that if we took that fight, that then that would not be available. So obviously that's a big deciding factor.
And is it also the case, but you sort of think now you're in this little British bubble of young heavyweights, except you, sir. But these two...
What are you trying to say?
But those two fights will always be there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're working their way up. They're going to have their little domestic beef, and then and meanwhile, I'll be chasing the world titles, and you know, perhaps like later on the line, and be like big fight in the UK, something.
Right, there's been reports over the last couple of days that Char, who you mentioned, is lining up a purse bid for his WBA title. Mm-hmm. Caballel, I think, is allowed to have a voluntary. So if those two are out of the equation, yeah, potentially, who would you be your ideal in the opposite corner on July 13th?
I don't know, Brian, or I don't know, there's a few more names. Chisora, but he doesn't want it. I know Takam.
How long have you been chasing Chisora now? Because I remember yourself and David Hay following him around for a while.
I know, and now they're together in the same thing. So I don't know. I don't know. I just.
You're through David Hay turning it down now, isn't it?
Maybe. I don't know. Or we'll see. Anyway. I don't know. I'm just gonna do my part. I'm gonna go in the gym. I'm gonna make myself the best Joe Joyce, and I would leave it to my team and promoter to make the fights, the big fights.
There is business to attend to first, though, Joe, and it's at Stevenage, and it's the big giant Alexander Ustinov. Now you're going to be looking up at opponent as an opponent. That can't happen very often.
Yeah, I think the last was like Donny Palmer.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe.
Maybe this one might eat you back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or Ditchko in the Olympics. It's going to be a good test. You know, he's very strong, he's tough, and he's you know, it's going to be slightly taller. So
he's been ranked highly for a long time now, hasn't he? So I mean, it's a very good ninth fight for you, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I aim to I've been in some big tests, and I think he's a test and a good name in short notice. So I think it's going to be an entertaining fight, and I'm going to, you know, perhaps practice what I've worked in the gym with Adam and the team, and, you know, have a practice run, like going into the dressing room and like see how I do things, wrap hands, and, you know, see how we get on as a warm up for July.
I think if you let Ustinov hit you with some of the shots you let Stiverne hit you with,
yeah,
he could cause you some problems. Is that something you've been addressing with Adam?
Yeah, definitely get, you know, not leave my head there to be hit, you know, to get offline and to move, use my footwork a lot bit more effectively, and my head movement to be more unpredictable and avoid shots after I've, you know, dished them out. I need to get away and not sit there, like, take them.
Will that relentless style you've got become a bit more selective, or will that always be you?
No, that's my style, so I still do that. It's very entertaining, and I enjoy doing it, and you know, putting my opponents through their paces, and I look forward to putting Ustinov in his place.
Right then, Dubois v Gorman. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, and unlike on the stage, you did tell us, but you had Dubois down to win that fight. Has anything changed in your thinking?
I don't know. I think it's a very, you know, it's a 50-50 fight. I can see it's going to be very competitive. They both have their strengths and their weaknesses. I think, obviously, Dubois with his, you know, he's a very strong, powerful guy. I think, you know, with his last fight, he seemed to be open, susceptible to be, like, hit back, and he's a bit, he seems still a bit raw. Whereas Gorman, you know, he's very, very much more tactical, and I think he's got more of a boxing brain. He's got a really great left hook, really fast left hook, and I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a great fight to watch, and I'm very interested in seeing it, and obviously I'll be watching in the change room with great interest.
You've talked your way around the houses. Are you still with Gorman? We're still with Dubois?
I don't know.
No let up. Let's have it.
Today with the press conference and that, and like, I know it's very equal.
You're sitting on that fence.
Yeah, I mean, I'd quite like to see the Gorman win, actually.
Is because you were avoiding Dubois for the British title. You don't want to fight him.
I'm going to run for the hills. Oh, he's looking at me. Oh, yeah. It's going now. I look forward with great interest.
Well, we've heard from Daniel Dubois, we've heard from Nathan Gorman, we've heard from Frank Warren, and we've just heard from Joe Joyce. They are all in action, apart from Frank, of course, on July the 13th at the O2 Arena in London. Tickets are on sale Friday from 12 o'clock. It's a heavy-duty night of boxing. I think the guys had no choice but to call the show heavy-duty because Frank just kept saying it's going to be a heavy-duty night. So it will be a heavy-duty night, July 13th. It's a big one. Don't miss it. Tickets on sale via AXS.com, Ticketmaster and Eventim. Can't wait. Well, Steve, you had Artur Beterbiev in action, Joe and Chaos in action last weekend on Box Nation. Tell me, what you got coming up this weekend on the Channel of Champions?
This weekend, Davis, a live boxing double. Start on Friday night at the Indigo, which is a nightclub concert venue at the O2 in London. Ultimate Box of Three, $50,000 in prize money. It's like a prize fighter tournament. It's a middleweight competition this week. Eight men. The quarterfinals are Cain Hawes against Kieran Conway, which is where my money's going. Taylin Jones against Derek Osazi. Sean Phillips against Josh Groombridge. And Joe Hunt against Grant Dennis, and then they have semi-finals, and an exciting night out, and it's sold out the venue, I believe. The next night, Saturday, we're in Tucson, Arizona, for what is possibly the most exciting card that there's going to be anywhere in the world this year. It's a night of the rematches. It's the Mexican Warriors, Miguel Burchell, defending his WBC super featherweight title against Francisco Vargas. You may remember January 2017, they delivered what was probably one of the great all-Mexican wars. Burchell come through in 11 rounds, and it was an unforgettable contest. Burchell has kicked on and kicked on since then. Vargas has only had a couple fights since then, but what you're remembering for was that fight against Stephen Smith when Swifty suffered that horrific ear injury and got stopped in about 6 or 7 rounds. But it's a good fight. That is all-out war without a shadow of a doubt. And Burchell, really, he's one of those fighters who go under the radar, but when you analyse what he does and how he's knocking people out, he's one of those fighters who's on the fringes of these pound-for-pound lists of the top 10. I really do believe that. The co-main event, Isaac Dogbay, an old favourite of Box Nation. He's trying to regain his WBO super bantamweight championship from Emmanuel Navarrete. Won't forget last December, Navarrete really delivered it was a points thrashing over 12 rounds. Yeah. And quite sorry to see.
Big upset.
Big upset. I think Navarrete's a good fighter, and he might just have Dogbay's measure. I hope not, because I'm a big fan of Isaac, and he's shown a lot of love to Box Nation over the years when he's been in the studio and doing interviews with us. So fingers crossed he'll win, but he's in for a tough night, I believe.
Yeah, well, no doubt we are Team Dogbay over here. It'll be interesting. I think he's got a tall order ahead, and you know, literally as well, the guy's a lot taller than him, Navarrete, and that proved to be a real factor in that first fight. He's going to have to change something up, Dogbay, to get his belt back. And I look forward to seeing that this weekend. What time are you on air, Steve?
We're on air at 2:30. The first fight will be about 3 a.m. and it'll be the Dogbay fight.
Well, set your alarms or stay up this weekend on Box Nation. Looking forward to it. Well, now it's that time of the week again. It's the moment that every listener, every single one of you millions that listen every week, this is the moment that you wait for. It is, of course, time for me to ask, what you talking about, Lillis?
What am I talking about, Deb Sarni? This week, I'm a little bit bewildered. I'm not angry. I'm not, you know, rah, I'm not biting people. I'm not being the Rottweiler.
Nor should you.
I'm just a little bit peeved that people are moaning that Vasyl Lomachenko against Luke Campbell's been made by the WBC. I think it's an absolutely brave and bold move by the WBC Board of Governors after Lomachenko petitioned them to fight for their vacant title. You know, I'm not as far as to say it's a game changer, but, you know, when a WBO and IBF champion goes to another governing body and says, I want to fight for their title, surely it can only be good, because it's bringing us a step nearer one champion in that weight. you know, the winner of this fight only has to fight Richard Comey, and they will hold all four belts. So I don't see what the problem is with this fight at all. You know, there's a lot of it's Lomachenko's doing what he wants, but surely all boxing fans want to see one world champion. I think it's people who might have a bit of an agenda because Luke Campbell have been, you know, mandatory for Mikey Garcia for a long time, and they didn't go anywhere near wanting that fight. It seemed to me, I'm on the outside looking in, I apologise if I'm wrong, but that's how it looks to me and a lot of fans. And I think they were waiting until they had a winnable fight for him, or one that fitted the bill for his promoters. I think it's fantastic that, you know, we're going in this direction. Of course, I said Lomachenko, he's got the WBA and WBO belts. And, you know, there's only the IBF champion, Richard Comey, for the winner here after this. And we've got another four belted champion. Surely that is good for the sport of boxing.
It sounds like a good thing. It sounds like going towards and to borrow a phrase from Deontay Wilder, one face, one name at lightweight. And that's what they're working towards there. You know, I liked the news. You know, great, Lomachenko against Luke Campbell. It's probably going to happen in the UK. What's not to like? The only people who would feel aggrieved, essentially, are those who maybe have the alternative opponent, someone not called Lomachenko, someone like Devin Haney, or someone like the promoter of the, I think there's an Eastern European highly ranked with the WBC as well, who's obviously been overlooked for this fight in favour of Lomachenko. They have a right to feel aggrieved, sure, but fans, like, why would the fans feel aggrieved that they're seeing this fight instead of seeing other lesser fights? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, Dev. The only thing I will say is when unified champions in the future go to the WBC and say they get the same treatment, the WBC can't just now start saying, well, we'll do it for Loma, but we're not going to do it for, you know, another unified champion. You know, that's the thing I do want to see them to continue doing this, because it shows they're trying to bring the one champion into play, which is fantastic. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lomachenko comes over here sooner than you think, maybe early July.
Steve, what about this? And it's maybe it's just me, right? But the cynic in me suggests that Anthony Crawler, maybe Luke Campbell as well, were kind of positioned to potentially fight for vacant belts rather than actually wanting to fight the champion. Did they really want Crawler Lomachenko, or did they want Crawler against someone else for a vacant title? Maybe Lomachenko moves up, moves down, does whatever. Did they want Luke Campbell against Mikey Garcia, or did they want to wait and see when he vacated where the chips will kind of fall, kind of thing? Is that just me being a cynic, Steve?
Not in Luke Campbell's case. I think, you know, that he was holding on there long enough as mandatory without, you know, it seemed he'd been mandatory long enough without kicking off too much about it. And I think they were waiting there. I think, you know, Lomachenko was never going to give up that WBA belt, and the WBA slapped that mandatory on him. Look, we had Bob Arum on the podcast. He wasn't enamoured with that fight when we had him on the podcast, when the fight was ordered last December. I think Crawler, you know, that was, you know, that he boxed the WBA limiter against the guy from somewhere in the Far East whose name escapes.
Yeah.
You know, Dal Jordan, the Indonesian, who he beat on points in Manchester. And I think from then on, it was never going to be a case of him fighting for a vacant title, I don't think. Campbell, yes, I don't think you're being cynical at all when you mention Luke and a vacant title. But you know what? People are, you know, I'm not going to say Luke is going to win by any stretch. Lomachenko, to me, is number one in the world. But Campbell might be, you know, the biggest man he's faced, would he be? And it's another puzzle for the Matrix to work out. I like the fight, actually. I'm not slamming the fight. I like the fight. I just don't like the way people are protesting over the WBC making the fight.
Yeah, the protestations have been strange. The fight, I'm sure, will actually be a bit of a cracker. It's one I'm looking forward to. So, interesting stuff, Steve. Good rant. WBC-related rant. Oh, actually, no, you're praising the WBC. You're praising the bravery. You're more just annoyed people are annoyed.
I'm praising the WBC, and I had a stand-up with Mr. Suleiman's dad before.
Did you?
Yeah,
what
you don't even know about it.
Tell me.
Well, I made an accusation towards him once, and he went to throw a punch at me and knocked out a bottle of water and had to be taken away by security guards before he could kill me. Well, not kill me, attack me. And Buncey tells me, because he's a friend of Mr. Suleiman Jr., I am still banned from going into Mexico after this incident. I cannot go to Mexico anymore.
Steve, this sounds absolutely outrageous. What on earth happened? Why were you arguing? Why was the famous Jose Suleiman of the WBC swinging for my man, Steve Lillis? What happened?
Press conference, I think it was 2008, 2009, after Michael Brody, Hingjin Chi. Chi was made the winner, declared the winner, but the result was changed by Suleiman to a draw, you know, or the WBC. Post-fight press conference, I took it upon me to tell Mr. Suleiman it was okay. He went to attack me, but he missed with a left hook, I think it was, and kicked and swore and he was restrained by a security guard. But as he threw the shot, I sort of slipped it from a fair old way, and he didn't have the longest reach because he was only about 5 foot, and he managed to knock out a bottle of water.
Wow, what a story.
Well, that's the story. Yeah, yeah, man. I've got all sorts of mad stories like that for you, Dev. I've got all sorts of mad stories. I've got Mike Tyson even taking me into a room with six birds in from England.
Birds or birds?
Birds.
Oh, the flying birds.
Flying birds.
Flying birds, yeah.
When he invited me into
his hotel. I was going to bloody call up Mrs. Lillis there.
I didn't know what to expect.
Outrageous. Okay, so Mike Tyson and his birds, Jose Suleiman swinging for Steve Lillis. What on earth have you got lined up for us next week? By the way, I just want to ask
Mike Tyson story.
Yeah, give it to us in full.
I repeated this on Box Nation once or twice, but it's coming to the podcast next week. the day Mike Tyson wanted to show me six birds in his bedroom.
Well, Steve, all I want from you next week is to hear that Mike Tyson story. Steve Lillis plus Mike Tyson plus six birds plus a hotel room. Can't wait. I'll be tuning in. Well, obviously, I'll be tuning in. I'll be sort of hosting it. So anyway, we'll be back next week. Remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sonny Dev, at The Boxing Pod. Leave us a review. Have a great week. And thanks for listening. Steve, any final comments?
I just can't wait to tell you about Mike Tyson and six birds next week. I'm quite excited for it. And of course, besides that, we're going to be looking ahead to the first big open air show of the year. Stevenage Football Ground, Billy Joe Saunders bidding to become a two-weight world champion.
Yes, big one. Big show next week. We'll have all the main characters of that play coming up. Have a good week.